There's a moment just before dawn when the air feels neither night nor day, when the world seems to hold its breath as if something unseen has shifted. In that hour, a young woman kneels beside the body of her brother, fallen in battle on a dusty plain beyond the walls of a city that will one day be called Tarkinia. The earth is red beneath her fingers. The cries of the wounded have thinned to silence. Smoke lingers like a veil between the worlds. She doesn't see the first shadow approach, but she feels it. The wind changes. The birds fall still. When she looks up, she sees wings unfolding against the paling sky, great arching wings painted with a thousand watchful eyes. The figure who stands before her is neither monstrous nor radiant in the way that poets describe the Olympian gods. She's young. She's bare-chested, belted twice at the waist, clad in short-pleated skirts and hunting boots as though they're ready to move at any moment. In one hand, she carries a torch that doesn't flicker in the wind. In the other, she holds a key. The young woman doesn't scream. The winged figure doesn't strike. She is simply waiting. And when the brother's final breath leaves his body, the torch lowers toward the dark, and the wings shift as though opening a path no living eye can see. This is Goddess Vanth. To understand Vanth is to step into the Etruscan worldview, a worldview that refuses to divide the cosmos into rigid moral opposites. The Etruscans, who flourished in central Italy from roughly the 8th to the 3rd centuries BCE, they held a cosmology that was profoundly concerned with fate, divine will, and the interpretive reading of signs. The religion wasn't speculative in the Greek philosophical sense. It was more revelatory and ritualized, based upon sacred books said to have been given by divine beings, such as the Tages and the nymph Vigoia, who emerged from the earth itself. The cosmos for the Etruscans was structured, ordered, and divided into regions governed by specific deities. The sky itself was partitioned into 16 segments, and each of these were ruled by a god whose signs could be read through lightning and augury. Divination wasn't considered to be superstition then. It was the language of the universe. The will of the gods was woven into every tremor of the earth, every flash in the heavens, every unusual birth or flight of birds. Humans didn't impose their meaning upon chaos. They deciphered the intentions of an already meaningful cosmos. Within such a worldview, death wasn't random annihilation. It was transition under divine supervision. The afterlife was not this abstract paradise or even hell. It was an extension of an existence in the shadowed realm known through tomb paintings, sarcophagi, and ash urns that depicted banquets, journeys, and even encounters with underworld beings. The dead required guidance, escort, and even protection. The journey, it was perilous, but it was structured. It is in this structured passage that Vanth appears. Vanth enters the archaeological record in the 4th century BCE, emerging in Etruscan art with striking consistency. Unlike many Etruscan deities who were heavily syncretized with Greek gods, Vanth has no clear Greek counterpart. She's been compared in old scholarship to the Erinyes, the Greek Furies, because of her wings and association with scenes of violence. Yet this comparison falters under scrutiny. The Erinyes were avenging spirits of blood guilt, relentless in their pursuit of justice. Vanth, by contrast, is almost always depicted as calm, observant, and guiding rather than this punishing force. And her iconography is quite unmistakable. She wears a short pleated chiton gathered and belted twice at the waist, often with cross straps or baldrics between her breasts. She even wears these fur-lined hunting boots that give her the aspect of Artemis in motion, yet she's not Artemis. She doesn't stalk any prey. She waits at the edge of human catastrophe. And her wings are integral, they're not incidental. Other Etruscan figures sometimes appear winged, essentially to indicate their divinity or their inspiration, but Vanth is almost invariably ringed, suggesting that flight itself is central to her being. In some depictions, her wings are adorned with eyes, a chilling yet profound symbol of omnipresence and inevitability. Death sees all, and nothing escapes the watch of the threshold. She also carries objects that reveal her function. The torch lights the dark path, an attribute that's shared by other psychopomp figures across cultures. The key unlocks the gate to the underworld. The scroll that she occasionally holds has even been inscribed with her name in one remarkable instance, suggesting the literacy of fate, as though she bears knowledge of the destiny awaiting the soul. Sometimes snakes coil around her forearms, their heads resting in her hands, reinforcing her chthonic authority and her connection to the Earth's hidden powers. She appears quite frequently beside Karun, the Etruscan underworld guardian, often depicted with a hammer and a fearsome visage. Karun has long been equated with a Greek Charon, ferryman of the Styx, yet the Etruscan version is more menacing and physically imposing. In tomb paintings, they often flank doorways, one on each side, guardians of the passage. Some scholars have called Vanth the servant of Karun, yet this interpretation collapses when one considers that Vanth is represented more frequently in Etruscan art than any other underworld deity, including Karun himself. Frequency suggests her importance, and it suggests devotion. It's possible, even likely, that Vanth was not subordinate, but equal, perhaps even superior in certain functions. Where Karun embodies the terror of the crossing, Vanth embodies its inevitability and its guidance. If Karun guards the threshold with force, Vanth illuminates it. The Etruscan ideology surrounding death was neither nihilistic nor sentimental. Tombs were elaborate. They were painted with scenes of feasting, music, athletic games, and mythic encounters. Death was integrated into communal life. The dead were remembered, honored, and believed to continue in a shadowed but structured existence. Vanth's presence in scenes of slaughter or sacrifice doesn't indicate cruelty, it indicates readiness. She stands near battles not to incite violence, but to escort those whose fate has ripened. On an ash urn from Kyuzi, she rises from the ground itself, emerging at the moment of death. In other scenes, she walks beside the deceased, guiding them calmly toward the underworld. She doesn't drag. She doesn't threaten. Her posture is upright. It's even almost serene. One of the most striking depictions of Vanth appears on the pediment of the temple at Tlamu, or what's known as Latin Telamon, dating to the late 3rd century BCE. There she rides in a chariot with Adrastus, the only hero of the Seven Against Thebes who survives a disastrous campaign. Fragmentary though the sculpture is, Vanth's distinctive attire and wings identify her. She wraps her arms protectively around Adrastus as he escapes. In this moment, she's not the harbinger, but guardian, shielding a living hero directly from harm. Such imagery challenges simplistic assumptions about her as the mere death bringer. Vanth may even echo in two Roman times. In the Villa of the Mysteries at Pompeii, a 1st century CE fresco depicts a Dionysian initiation scene. Among the figures is a winged woman wearing boots and a short skirt holding a switch. Some scholars have identified her as Vanth, or at least a Vanth-like figure. And if so, her presence in an initiation ritual is profoundly symbolic. Initiation in mystery traditions is a symbolic death and rebirth. The initiate dies to the old self and emerges transformed. Who better then to preside than the goddess who knows the threshold intimately? The Etruscans believed that divine order structured human life from birth to death. Fate wasn't blind chance, but woven necessity. Diviners read livers of sacrificial animals to interpret the will of the gods. Lightning was cataloged and decoded, and the underworld was mapped in art and even in ritual imagination. In such a culture, Vanth becomes the embodiment of liminality itself, the space between breaths and even between worlds. Sometimes she's even spoken of in the plural, the Vanths, suggesting that she may represent not just a singular personality, but a class of divine beings who govern transition. Yet, the consistency of her iconography and the singular inscriptions of her name argue that she was experienced as a distinct presence. The pluralization may reflect the multiplicity of her appearances rather than the fragmentation of identity. The question of benevolence is central here. In scenes of gruesome violence, she stands apart. She's observant. She doesn't wield her sword, and she rarely uses force. Her torch doesn't burn the living. It illuminates the path of the dead. Modern interpreters who label her demon reveal more about post-Christian anxieties than about Etruscan belief. Demonization is an anachronistic imposition. Within her own cultural matrix, Vanth is neither good nor evil. She's just necessary, and necessity in the Etruscan worldview is sacred. Vanth stood at the edge of the path where the living rarely looked. The cypress trees swayed in the evening wind, their dark silhouette rising like quiet sentinels against the fading light. Below them, the road curved gently toward the shadowed hills where the entrances to the underworld were said to lie. A man walked the road alone. His breath was shallow, his steps uncertain, though he didn't yet understand why. The world around him had begun to soften at the edges. Colors were dimming, sounds drifting as though carried away by distant water. And then he saw her. She didn't appear with thunder or terror. She was simply there, standing just beyond the bend in the path. Her wings were folded softly behind her shoulders, dark feathers catching the last glow of the sinking sun. In one hand, she held a torch whose flame burned steady and gold, though no wind had touched it. The man felt a strange calm settle over him. "Am I lost?" he asked quietly. Vanth tilted the torch slightly so its light fell across the road ahead. The path beyond seemed clearer now, illuminated by a gentle glow that pushed back the growing dusk. Her gaze held neither judgment nor sorrow, only knowing. Somewhere far beyond the hills, the gates of another realm waited to open. But the road between worlds could be confusing, and souls often wandered without guidance. That was why she walked these quiet places. Vanth lifted the torch a little higher, and the shadows began to part. The man understood then, not with fear, but with a deep and sudden recognition. He stepped forward, and the winged guide of the Etruscan dead turned toward the hidden path, her light leading the way between the worlds of the living and the unseen. So why does Goddess Vanth matter for us today? Maybe it's because modern culture has exiled death from daily life. We hide it in hospitals, we hide it in funeral homes. We have a tendency to sanitize it. We fear it. We speak of it in euphemism, and we even avert our gaze from its reality, yet death remains inevitable. Transitions remain painful. Initiations remain disorienting. And we experience smaller deaths constantly in our lives. The end of relationships, the end of careers, our identities, the end of our belief systems. We even cross thresholds without guidance and then wonder why we feel lost. Vanth offers an image of accompaniment. She doesn't promise immortality of the ego. She doesn't even erase grief. She stands at that moment of rupture and says through her own presence, "You will not walk this alone." Her wings, sometimes painted with thousands of eyes, reminds us that nothing escapes the gaze of transformation. The key that she carries suggests that doors are meant to open. The torch implies that darkness is navigable. It's not absolute. In a culture that's obsessed with avoiding endings, Vanth teaches reverence for them. In a world that equates power with domination, she demonstrates power as watchful guidance. And in an era that confuses visibility with value, she shows that quiet presence at the threshold is its own authority. When we face our own initiations, our own symbolic deaths, we may imagine her walking beside us, not as some morbid fantasy, but as an archetype of sacred transition. We might even ask ourselves what it would mean to approach endings, not with panic, but with structured ritual, with acknowledgement that something divine is overseeing this passage. The Etruscans understood that life and death were not these moral opposites, but complementary phases within a divinely ordered cosmos. Vanth embodies that complementarity. She stands neither in heaven nor hell, but she stands in the doorway. And perhaps the most haunting truth is that she doesn't force the crossing, she waits. And in that waiting, there's dignity, there's inevitability, there's even compassion. When we look at her image carved into ash urns, painted on wall tombs, or even cast in bronze near the slopes of Mount Vesuvius, we see a civilization that's grappling honestly with mortality. We see a goddess who was neither borrowed from Greece nor diluted into Roman abstraction, but it's uniquely Etruscan in her clarity. She is not the scream of terror. She is the hush before the door opens. And if we dare to imagine her wings unfolding behind us in our own moments of transformation, we may find that what we feared as annihilation is in fact passage, structured, even illuminated. And Vanth is waiting there at the threshold for us still.